Today's study is in the Gospel of John. I think it's chapter 11, and beginning with verse 47. And we'll have a reading of through 52. In other words, 47 through 52. Sister Esther.
Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council, and said, What do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. And one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, Ye know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation perish not. And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for the nation, and not for that nation only, but that also he should gather together in one children of God that
was gathered abroad. Now we return to verse 47. And the reaction of the scribes and Pharisees, or the priests and Pharisees. It says, Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council, and said, What do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation. Any comments? All right, now, yes.
Only that they apparently were well aware of what Jesus had been doing. They observed that he had done many miracles. So they probably were keeping a track on what was going on.
Yeah. And of course, this raising of Lazarus was a stupendous miracle. And it took place right in the very, in the capital, in the area of the capital, Bethany, which is 5 miles from Jerusalem. Yes.
And then he re-emphasized. I'm just wondering whether the counterpart to the Romans could be versus the communists, that depending on the message that the speech, well, not the speakers, but that the consecrated would be giving about the hope of the kingdom and so on, that when it does have that reasonable popularity in upcoming days or years, that the powers that be might fear that if this message gains too wide a hold, that then Christendom would perish and the communists would take over.
It seemed a reasonable assumption, yes. Certainly we don't expect the Romans. And this was an alien power, the Roman power, exercising an influence over Israel. So it was hated, and now, of course, communism is viewed as a threatening power to take over. Any other comment or observation? Can we then continue?
Excuse me, but of course, in the case of the church, it's not a question of miracles, though. This man who is saying miracles is applying more to their message.
Yes. Well, the miracle, the message, if it gained popularity, would mean that that would be considered like a miracle from the public standpoint, because it's like would be like opening, as it were, blind eyes to certain truths they never dreamed of existed. So that would be like miraculous. In verse 49, one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said unto them, ye know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, that the whole nation perish not. And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation, and not for that nation only, but that also we should gather together in one the children of God that were scattered abroad. I agreed the whole thing, because this is what the high priest, the statement that he made. Any observations in connection with the content of his remarks? Yes, Sister Chai.
I think it's a quite interesting, as a high priest, maybe God's providence have used his mouth to prophesy this account, and yet later on he also plotted to kill Jesus, knowing this.
Mm-hmm. In other words, that he spoke, let us put it another way, that he spoke sort of artificially, mm-hmm. as he was moved by the Spirit of God on that occasion, because he occupied ostensibly the office of high priest. And that usually the high priest would be looked to in ancient times for counsel on critical issues. And that's interesting that a man who had different ulterior motives, that the Lord should on some occasions do things like this. We have other precedents. Can anybody think of any? Yes?
I was just thinking, though, maybe it's not applicable, the God hardening the heart of Pharaoh in connection with...
All right, that's like an indirect, knowing that the certain stimulus would create a certain response. That in that sense, it says that the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, but actually it was Pharaoh's heart that was not in the right condition. But he knew that a certain stimuli, which was not really in itself, there was no guilt or anything wrong with the stimuli, but it created, it triggered a reaction that you could almost know in advance. It's like you say a certain fruit. You know how a certain personality will react to that. Now, if they react unfavorably, you are not morally responsible for that reaction. But nevertheless. All right, any other instance? Yes?
Balaam was an example.
All right. Balaam was used to prophesy on the hill over Israel to pronounce a curse, and he did exactly the opposite. He pronounced a blessing, Balaam. He also uttered a prophecy, not only with regard to the people, but the star. A star shall rise out of Jacob. This is like the remarks of this prophet, Balaam, who later is shown to possess a wrong spirit and is condemned in the book of Numbers, a certain chapter later on. For the counsel, the evil counsel that he gave Balak. So here you have a person who is not in harmony with the Lord, really, yet the Lord mechanically used them on that occasion. Anything else? Yes? All right, so that's a good illustration. He prophesied on one occasion, and the people, some people observed that. Is he a prophet also? Not only king, but under that influence. All right, that's, we don't want to beleaguer the situation. Any other observation with regard to the remarks that he made? All right.
You're going all the way down.
52, because the... Rather than take just one verse at a time, this is the substance. Notice he says, ye know nothing at all. Now, what about that? Other observation? Yes?
I think it looks like they hear that he's truly, just totally, he was used, even they're blaming the other people who, one person, the other people are blaming Jesus, he's going to be followed by every other people, but this man is already prophesying it. You don't know nothing at all, just starting with that, and Jesus must die for our benefit. He's prophesying, totally agreeing with it.
In other words, what you're saying is that, in effect, that when it states, ye know nothing at all, that is actually true.
Yes.
That it's God speaking through him in this mechanical fashion, and that they, in making this evil counsel to put Jesus to death, did not realize that by doing that, they would be fulfilling God's purpose in the sense that he came to die, and that unwittingly, they were, because of their disposition, jealousy, and other envy that they had towards Jesus, they were really fulfilling God's plan. So that when the Holy Spirit said, ye know nothing at all, it's like almost like sarcastic that the Lord is telling them, you really don't know what you're doing. That by doing these things where you think he's an evil man, and that by putting him to death it'll silence his testimony, actually they don't realize that it's doing exactly the opposite. That his death means salvation, and that it will not silence him. It will make the disciples even more fervent in zeal, because later when he's raised, sarcastic remark then from that would be different than that which emanated from him personally. That, you see, when you read this in context quick, you get the impression that the first part of his remark is his own personal statement, and the second half of his remark is like under the Spirit, whereas really it's the whole remark that he makes that is under the Spirit. Ye know nothing at all that it is expedient for one man to die lest the nation perish. All that whole statement is a mechanical utterance being issued. Any other comment? Yes?
In verse 52, talking about the children of God that were scattered abroad, literally back here, was that referring to the Jews who were outside of Israel, or is there a wider application?
It can have a wider application, but primarily, first, it would have the application to the Jews scattered elsewhere, because the Epistle of James in this New Testament addresses the Jews who are scattered abroad. That his message was directed not only to the homeland Jews, the Jews resident in Israel, but his message was to those elsewhere. But now when we read James, we see that what applies to the Jew and to the Jew elsewhere also applies to the Gentile. We see that in the process of time it broadens out to include more than just those. But I think the primary emphasis is first the witness to the lost sheep of Israel.
And that
yes.
Should not take place until after the emphasis.
That's right. And really, after Cornelius's conversion, which is even later than, but which is after Pentecost, but even three years or so. More.
But in fact, doesn't that bring in the oneness
Yeah, well, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Eventually, when it would assume the broader aspect, it would be the bringing all together one in Christ. But I think in this is like the focal point originally here is to acquaint. He came to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But actually, that message was designed to embrace those who may not have been resident in the land, but are scattered abroad. Even they are to be acquainted with the truth. And even though he traveled the land to and fro, Israel himself, but his disciples took up that refrain and it went out to others. And even at Pentecost, where the Jews are addressed, you'll notice that at Pentecost, that it says that they were from scattered lands, that they were present in Israel, and that they were a holy people, a devout people, it tells in Acts, to whom Peter addressed this congregation of Jews who had the zeal to leave a foreign land and to come to Israel to observe one of these feasts. And they stayed on quite a while, incidentally. And it said that a great conversion took place. Thousands were converted by the one sermon of the Apostle Peter on that occasion. So that's gathering those that are scattered abroad. By providence, they're coming in to this feast, and then Peter testifies to them what he learned of Jesus. Let's read verse 53 and 4. Next, please.
Then from that day forth, they took counsel together for to put him to death. Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence unto a country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples.
All right. Then it says, then from that day forth, they took counsel together and put him to death. From what day forth?
The utterance of this prophecy, the scientist.
All right.
The day before the miracle that happened?
Well, actually, they had plotted to do some of these things before, which we could prove, but that isn't the purpose of this lesson here, I think. But I think the point is that now they, being their chief spokesman, gave this advice that it's, don't you know that it's expedient? They took it from another standpoint. When they listened to the high priest saying this, they didn't see it from the divine standpoint in which he mechanically uttered it. They viewed that as it's expedient that he should die, lest the Romans come and the nation perish and so forth. And so they take his advice. Now they think that's good advice. And now they're going to really, in a concerted fashion, counsel to put him to death. There are indications that some among the membership had these views prior to this. That can be shown. But this is like a more collective, concerted action took place from that moment on. Any other comments? Yes?
If my Bible math is accurate, would Ephraim be about 15 miles north of Jerusalem, not that far away?
It cannot be proven where this place is. And there's been many, many comments on it. And it's put on the map because that's the calculated guess of the one who made that map, who would favor a certain one of many views on that point. Because normally Ephraim is way up near Nablus, in that area, and usually applies to a territory rather than a village or city. Here, it would be a village or city that's spoken of, and not a province, as it were. Yes?
And another question. In regard to the anthropite, does this indicate that following the general public witness, there would be an indication of around antipathy, and that the feet members for a brief period would refrain from speaking, watching for the Lord to set the stage here with Jesus, that was the Passover. But would it indicate there might be a little brief period of quiet or prudent silence until it's apparent it's now the time to speak out again?
Yes, I would think so. Going back now to the other question, which we haven't finished yet. It mentions this place as being in the wilderness of Judea, this village. And it probably was south of Jerusalem, and probably somewhere in the vicinity where this Episcopal minister lost his root and went and died in the wilderness. Pike, Bishop Pike. There's a road down near Bethlehem that if you wanted to go, say, to Bethlehem, that you would turn to the right along this little dirt path or road, like sightseeing, which he did. And he didn't take cognizance of the different forks that he passed. And then when his car stalled, they didn't know where to go for help. And the more they went for help, the more confused they got and got lost, because they were in the wilderness of Judea. Where the easiest thing would be to backtrack from where you came, but they did not take, they had no awareness that they should take note of signs along the way, so that when they want to return, and so when he went to come back, everything looked reversed, and they had no recollection like that, and the car stalled, and they went exactly the wrong way, both of them. They both went in the wrong direction. And it was just like the woman was the one who survived, because she happened to be more fortunate than that people found her stretched on a highway that she found quite a distance away. But the wilderness of Judea is near Jerusalem. It is very close. And you can begin to see this. For instance, say you're going down to Jericho, even today, and you're leaving Jerusalem. You only have to go a few miles, say 6 or 7 miles, and you come to sterile desert on both sides, but particularly on the right side. They're now building concrete houses and so forth in the wilderness and supplying water. But even that is pretty close to Jerusalem, those new settlements. But anciently, that was really barren land. Real well. So I think it's when it speaks of the wilderness of Judea, it usually means that which is southeast of Jerusalem. So this is some little unknown village of which I don't think anybody can really pinpoint, but I would think it would not be too far from Bethlehem, but almost due east into the wilderness instead of north into civilization. Now, then came the second part about this possibly having an application the end of the age. I personally think that there are intimations along this line of experiences at the end of the age of the foot members that would be quite similar in many respects to our Lord's last days. And it states, and there continued with his disciples, suggesting it was a period of refreshment and enlightenment or something. It's a rest period. He doesn't say he went and did other things, to visited or preached or something like that with his disciples. Another thing, this would suggest possibly a getting together, knowing what is really impending and soon to occur. You would like to have some preparation and some consolidation before such an event takes place. So if you have it as an antitype, that would mean that this period of easement in between, a period of relative popularity, would be would be with the view that knowing what is about to take place, you're trying to regroup your resources for that occasion. Yes?
Has this been a special meeting? I've forgotten. I know they all just have a name.
Well, even here, the spelling and all is not quite positive. Incidentally, there's something like this in Joshua, when he divided the land, there's a place mentioned with this, but instead of with the word, the letter M as in Mary, it ends with the word N as in Nathan. I have not thought of it from that standpoint because I don't know what the Ephraim means fruitful. Ephraim, the word Ephraim means fruitful. And so if you took it from this spiritualized standpoint, it might mean that such regrouping and consideration of being given to the impending doom, as it were, of the true church, that it would be a period of refreshment and helpful or fruitful in that sense. So your comment might very well be.
Fortifying each other.
Yeah.
To what might be taking place.
Yeah. And seeking counsel of Jesus and the Lord's word as to what to do. Can we continue? Let's finish the chapter 55 on.
And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover, to purify themselves. Then sought they for Jesus, and spake among themselves, as they stood in the temple, "What think ye, that he will not come to the feast?" Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given a commandment that, if any man knew where he were, he should show it, that they might take him.
Now we're getting really to the final days of Jesus. Because this Passover is the one in which the season he died. So it's like just saying that it's only a fortnight away that he'll be crucified. And now it tells us too that some people who were intending to come to the feast, that there were a number who came earlier than would be normally necessary. They would all have to come down there to be there, but some came down a little bit earlier in order to purify themselves. They wanted to ready themselves so that the feast could be observed proper fashion. And also the temple would be open. This is in the days before the Passover. So if they go to the priest or for certain cleansing, that they could, the quicker they do it, the better, and then they could, with peace of heart, observe the Passover in a cleansed condition. Now, it's that group that come down early who are discussing among themselves, do you think he's going to come down? Do you think Jesus will come down to this feast? Among themselves. And it says that this feast is drawing nigh. So we're not right now at this moment down to necessarily the very last week, but the closest thing to it within just a couple of days. That's why you said a fortnight, which is within 10 days. But just where the next chapter, of course, pinpoints at that point, it starts a countdown. The countdown starts. Here it's just an approximation to that. And this now shows that now they have taken counsel together and they're now more determined to do something about it. But we know that the moment he comes in, they would have liked to have apprehended him right away, before. But certain providential things happened that forbade it. Because there were too many people with him. Jesus now is beginning, he has raised Lazarus, so now he's getting popular, and they would like to get him right away, but how can you with all these people around? If we take him, it'll be as obvious to the people that we are are evil disposed to him as an individual. And that they don't want to do. They don't want to show that they're the ones that are going to put him to death. But they want to know all about him, his whereabouts, and so that they can keep a watch on him and at the most opportune moment grab him, as it were. So now they're intending to apprehend him even in advance. But they didn't know that there's a lot of other things going to happen to forbid that until a little later, some days later. Can we go into the next chapter briefly?
Just one question, yes. That last verse. Are we to assume then that this commandment to preach the Pharisees say that it was generally known among all the people, or would it?
I would say they had hand-picked sympathizers. Just like in the nominal church today, you have laymen who are honored but may not be of the priesthood. But you have the Knights of Columbus. There are different societies related to the church who are very much religious-minded, but they are not in the clergy. These would be then, the word would get out to these sympathetic individuals to let us know where he is and so forth.
But
yes?
At this time, when they say it's to purify themselves, is that what fashion do they purify themselves?
If they touch a dead body, if there's a burial or something, there's a cleansing period of time in which this has to be done according to the law. And there's other things, too, that could do that.
Childbirth is one, too, isn't it?
Yes. Childbirth and menses. A lot of other things that could occur. All right.